You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to A Pirate's Life for Me on The Sports Objective. Join us every Friday at noon as we catch up with a member of Pirate Nation. Here's your host, Bubba Rosenbaum.
Welcome into A Pirate's Life for Me on The Sports Objective as we come to you on Facebook Live as well as YouTube. Remember, you can also hear the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. And, you know, we typically bring you this program on Friday at noon, and it is usually pre-recorded. But this week we had to call an audible as we had a scheduling conflict with former Pirate basketball star Maurice Kemp. And we'll have him on the show next week. But this week, very excited to have a guy that I've known for about a year now and certainly knew of him prior to the last year, but met him up at Navy, tailgated with him for several hours in Annapolis, had a lot of fun talking Pirate football, and welcome back to the show, Jason Tindall. Jason, we appreciate your time this morning.
Absolutely, Bubba. It's great to be on here. Thanks for asking me to join again. And like always, it's great to talk about East Carolina athletics and Pirate football.
And that day when we were catching up in Annapolis, and getting to know one another, you were telling my dad and I your Pirate story, if you will, and, you know, how you wound up at East Carolina. So just take us back to high school. I know your dad was a coach. And so tell us how, you went to App State and then wound up at ECU.
Yeah, it's, in the late 80s, early 90s, when in high school, recruiting was a lot different than it is now with social media and Huddle and all the coverage with 24/7, et cetera. But I was recruited by Coach Lewis, and my recruiting coach who actually recruited me out of high school was Steve Logan at the time. And, signing day was a lot later back then. And really the only way you were tracked as in the media was through something called the poop sheet back in those days. And when I got a call from, I believe it was Coach Logan or Coach Jags called my high school coach the day before the Peach Bowl and said that they were leaving. And we just got lost in a shuffle. I was excited about coming to East Carolina. I was planning to go to East Carolina. So I wound up taking recruiting visits and just fell in love with Appalachian State on my recruiting visit and wound up committing to the Mountaineers. And, part of that story is one of the ECU coaches came around that spring, and there's a tight end, Sherman McLeod, who also went with me to App, that East Carolina was recruiting pretty heavy at the time. And, the coach asked my high school coach, says, where's Sherman and Jason? And I think they were more interested in Sherman at the time, to be honest with you. But they said, well, they signed with Appalachian State. And so we went to App State and played two seasons there and, wound up having a really good second year, sophomore year. And, just to be honest, I had a female situation. I was dating a girl from home and wind up transferring to East Carolina in the spring of 94. So that January of 94, I transferred to ECU and wound up with only 11 hours. And Coach Jags reached out to me and asked if I wanted to come to spring workouts. And I was like, yeah, I'm good to go. I was ready to, jump back into the fold with football, and had been working out with a couple of the players, and there's a gym underneath a dorm there on campus. And we would work out sometimes, even away from Coach Connors. And he called me that afternoon, Coach Jags did, and said, you're not able to come because you only have 11 credit hours. So I was technically a part-time student. And so I was out of spring ball and started becoming a normal student and started saying, hey, this college life was pretty good, without having the rigors of football. And at that point, Mike O'Kane had taken over at NC State, and he called my high school coach and said he heard that I was at ECU. And that was the first year that you could transfer from FCS to FBS and not lose any eligibility. So he called, and Brett Simmons, who's recruiting coordinator, and Ken Pettis was a linebacker coach at NC State. And I transferred to State that summer to play football for the Wolfpack. And, I think fate took over, and I was hurt. I was injured all summer. I really could never really get in shape. And they weren't really sure at that point. And our compliance officer at NC State said, we're not sure if they're going to let you play because the NCAA is looking at that semester at East Carolina as a double transfer in 1 year. And I just said, you know, at that point, Bubba, I said, you know, guys, obviously I think my playing days are done. And I gave up playing. Fate would have it, NC State gave me a chance to work for the athletic department that year. So I got to spend a lot of time working there. And I knew the whole time I was going to transfer about ECU, because I'll be frank with everybody. There was nothing about school at NC State that I liked. And it just wasn't a fit for me. And I transferred back to East Carolina. And then that summer, I landed a job working for legendary coach Dixon Sauls at Farmville Central while wrapped up school, and also did some volunteering for Coach Connors in the weight room in the mornings and in the afternoons for the guys who are redshirted. We put them through weight workouts and things like that. But that's how I wound up at East Carolina. So it's kind of a long story, but it's, you know, it's a journey I took. I could write a book about transferring to schools in North Carolina. And so that's really the story there.
Once you arrived back in Greenville, you were there during the mid-90s. Obviously, a lot of success being had, back-to-back Liberty Bowls, 94, 95. And then that 96 team went 8-3, didn't get a bowl, which was a crying shame. And then, obviously, 98 was another winning season at 6-5. Coming off that losing season of 5-6 in 97. So just talk about, you were able to be involved with the program to some degree and, you know, be an assistant for Coach Connors. Is that right?
Yeah. So I volunteered for him. I went up when one of his phys ed classes, and I just said, "Hey coach, I play ball." He asked me, he came over to, I was squatting. He goes, did you play sports or something? I said, yeah, I played at App State, and I was actually supposed to come to ECU when Coach Lewis was here. And we just kind of hit it off. He said, look, if you want to come in here in the afternoons or in the mornings and just be here and help. And so I got to do that. And I remember Pernell Griffin was a freshman. He was one person that I enjoyed, you know, working with a little bit. I didn't do it a lot because my class schedule and then my commitment to Farmville Central really prohibited the time I got to spend. But I did get to witness an epic Coach Connor moment. With a VCR and just making sure the freshmen and the red shirts understood their place in line and the kind of intensity he expected. I'll just leave it at that. But it was fun, fun afternoon when he put that show on for everybody. I was really good friends with a lot of the players, and you mentioned those teams, and I was just having this conversation with a coworker the other day about how, you know, there wasn't a Saturday we went to or a Thursday night or whatever, we didn't feel like we were going to win. And something about ECU is just special, Bubba. And that's why I enjoy going to games and talking, you know, Pirate football and Pirate athletics and ECU in general with folks like yourself and your dad and other Pirates that are out there. So it was a great time to be at East Carolina. You know, super competitive, super tough, super blue collar, passionate fan base at the time. And we're getting that back now with Coach Houston, which is, you know, a positive trend.
We definitely are. And we'll talk about the here and now as it is game day. The Pirates taking on Tulane this afternoon down in New Orleans at Yulman Stadium. Should be a heck of a matchup. And I certainly expect it to be a four-quarter game on what a job Willie Fritz has done with the Green Wave. But before we talk about that, you know, reflecting on those mid-90s seasons, you know, a little more specifically, you mentioned some of the names, someone like Pernell Griffin. You know, he was more toward the later 90s, wrapped up his Pirate career in 2001. But some of those other linebackers, you know, guys like Mark Libiano and then Jeff Carr, those names come to mind. And Carr, like Griffin, was more later 90s. But what were your memories of some of those mid-90s teams with, you know, B.J. Crane, Marvin Burke, Carlos Brown, and obviously just a load of talent on the defensive side?
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, talking about the weight room, I think it was Garrett Dorm, if I remember correctly. I used to go lift with those guys in the evenings with B.J. And there's a guy named his last name was Robinson. He was a linebacker as well at the time. I cannot remember his first name. It escapes me, but I got to know Jeff Carr a little bit because, you know, my journey created a 6-year stint in college without a master's degree. So I was there for a while. And you know, talking about some Pirate greats, Dwayne Ledford was actually an offensive line coach for me at Sanderson High School when I was a head coach at Sanderson. Dwayne, before he went back to ECU as a grad assistant, was my offensive line coach for 1 year. But, you know, Jeff Carr and, you know, used to come over and we'd go to Shane McPherson's house, apartment, and watch NASCAR and do curls. And all the football guys would be over here, most of the meatheads, most of the offensive linemen. But, you know, the thing was that was so cool about it was a family. I mean, it was, you know, race, religion, year, position, it didn't matter. Everybody would just hang out and have a good time. And you know, they embraced me. They knew I played football. And it was something special about ECU and that those football teams. But I will say this, they were super deep. You think about what, even when Semenza was there, they were so deep at inside linebacker and outside linebacker. And it reminds me a lot watching these teams now that Coach has put together. It looks a lot like those mid-90s teams that, you know, would roll into the Orange Bowl and whip up on Miami Hurricanes, or, you know, some of the big wins they had with Syracuse, et cetera.
And that's a good segue. Some of those wins, you know, 94, I remember going to South Carolina and putting 56 on the Gamecocks. Winning that game 56-42, shootout with Steve Tannehill and the Thunder Chickens, as we call them. But then also, you referenced some of those others, Syracuse, Miami. You know, obviously, you were just a student. You weren't part of the program in that way as a player, unfortunately. But just what are some of your top memories of attending games, be it at Dowdy-Ficklin as it became in 94, or on the road, obviously, on some of those tremendous road venues?
Yeah, obviously, you know, the times we beat up on NC State in Charlotte was a big one. But the game that stands out to me the most from that time wasn't one that was one of the most memorable for ECU fans as far as a win, but the Thursday night when Southern Miss came in town and just beat up on us. That next day, I went out to lunch with some of those guys that were on the offensive line, and there was something different that day. They weren't joking around and messing around and, you know, cracking jokes on each other. And Shane looked at me and said, "That will never happen again while we're here. It will not happen." And lo and behold, you look from that point on what they started doing that season. And granted, they didn't wind up with a bowl game that year, which I think is – it's a tragedy, to be honest with you, because we were definitely one of the top, you know, 20, 25 teams in the country. But that game stands out the most. The West Virginia game when, you know, Larry Shannon caught the bomb on the first play, that was a big game. And, you know, I think we took it for granted back then because those teams would still come to Dowdy-Ficklin and play us. And now, you know, our fan base is clamoring to have those so-called P5 teams come in town. And, you know, I think back then we were just so used to it coming out of the independent and then, you know, playing the Metro teams and then what became the Big East and, you know, having that regular rivalry games with those larger, you know, so-called universities. We got a little complacent with that. But yeah, there's so many games there, Bubba, that, you know, we just, I remember when UCF used to come in town when they first became a team, a FCS, then an FBS team, and Dante Culpepper and folks like that. We never, ever, ever, ever considered that we could lose those games. That's just the mindset we have as ECU fans, and also that those football teams back then, just tough, blue-collar, hard-nosed teams with great quarterback play, but also just really good defense as well.
Yeah, that 96 season that you referenced was my freshman year of high school. So I remember that Thursday night loss to Southern Miss that you mentioned well, falling 28-7. And it was a game, it seemed like we moved the ball quite a bit and just could not convert and capitalize on red zone opportunities and chances to make that game close. And it was that ugly 3-touchdown loss. And then we're going to the Orange Bowl the following week, and you talk about the way the guys really transformed the season, you know, from that point on, and just played tremendous football. Even though you lost a game or two, it was a competitive loss. It wasn't like that Thursday night game against Southern Miss. And a couple things stand out to me about those or that sequence of games with Southern Miss and Miami. One of my teammates at the time, my freshman year, JV team at West Forsyth High School before I moved to North Davidson. And so this kid was a Miami fan, you know, all the success they were having there in the late 80s and early 90s. So he was a bandwagon Hurricane fan. And you know, he knew we had lost 28-7 to Southern Miss. And he said, man, we were going to kill y'all. I said, just wait and see. I said, Southern Miss, first of all, I think they're probably better than Miami. And we didn't play the way we can play. So just see how the game plays out. And needless to say, the next week, you know, he was avoiding me like the plague after the Pirates went to the Orange Bowl and won 31-6.
Yeah, there's a play we score. And my mind escapes who it was, but one of our offensive linemen drove. I think it might have been Kennard Lang or somebody they had on their team at the time. I could be wrong there as well, but literally drove him into the end zone bleachers, out of the back of the end zone. They didn't throw a flag. Of course, nowadays they probably throw him out and make him sit out half of a game. But that's just how, you know, when we were rolling, we were flat out dominant, and Miami had a team of draft picks, and we just beat on them. I mean, just beat them up. Speaking of the Syracuse win, there's a Syracuse win one time. It's a funny story, and East Carolina fans can relate to this too, from back in those days in the late 80s and early 90s. We beat Syracuse in the Carrier Dome, and my neighbor's boyfriend had a Camaro, and he went out there and started spinning his wheels and burning, you know, squalling his tires, and he blew up the Camaro in the parking lot, just celebrating after that day, that win in at Syracuse. So it's just a memory I'll never forget.
Going back to that Miami game very quickly, I know Matt Semenza said that you mentioned those big names for the Hurricanes. Casey Jones, I believe was his name, the standout center for Miami. And Semenza said that, you know, that he was just absolutely running his mouth, and, you know, even when we were beating the way they were, and he was not handling the beatdown very well.
Yeah, I can imagine, because, you know, they at the time, I believe it might have been the worst loss they had in Orange Bowl, you know, since like 1980 or something like that. And for ECU to come in there and do that, and, you know, we had that brand at the time, you know, we could, you know, play anybody anywhere, we could beat anybody anywhere. And, you know, I'm really hoping we can get back to that point where, you know, I'm not holding my breath on a Saturday morning. Because back then we didn't. I mean, when we lost, we took it hard because we expected to win every game.
The other memory that came to mind about that was what Coach Logan said on his coach's show following the game. And that reminded me of the story you were telling about going out to the players that Friday morning after the Southern Miss loss. And that just reflected on Coach Logan's sentiment, and just saying that he said, now, honestly, I mean, I had no way of knowing whether we were going to actually win the game. He said, I just knew that, you know, seeing the look in our guys' eyes in the locker room during pregame and so forth, that we were going to play the game in the Pirate way, and that it was going to be a four-quarter ball game. And you saw what happened.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that also carried over. If you think about the big win when we played Miami and Carter Finley during that, you know, hurricane, and that scenario with, you know, everybody coming together. You know, the story of Coach Logan going in at halftime, even though we're down by, I think, 17 or 10 or whatever it was, and he didn't have a speech or anything planned. They didn't even make adjustments. He said, just listen. And you had Pirate Nation there in that stadium, you know, saying, ECU, and he goes, guys, just listen. And that's all he had to say to him. And it's just something about it. There's something different about East Carolina University. It's special. And you know, I think that's why folks like you and myself and so many of us are so passionate about it. It's just, there's something about it, something in the water, something in our blood. It's just different than other schools.
Yeah, you mentioned the extenuating circumstances of that 99 game against Miami. That was one, obviously, well-documented, and rightfully so, with everything the Pirates overcame to not only play a football game, but to beat the number 9 team in the nation, rallying from 23-3, I guess, early in the second half. And another story about that game is we've had the Hart twins as well as some of the other players from that 96 team on the show. And Coach Logan allowed them to come in the locker room and speak to the team at halftime, you know, when there were those purple and gold cheers and the ECU chants going on despite being down 17 points.
Yeah, I mean, what a special night, right? I mean, being there, I'm so glad I went in person and was able to experience that because it was just I'll never forget that night. I mean, that was truly what ECU is all about. And you know, like I said, it's what keeps us coming back, even during the tough times. When, you know, when we went through some struggles the last few years, you just knew that power was still there and that opportunity was still there to get back to those days where, you know, we put a quality product on the field every Saturday, and I feel like we're doing that now. So we got the pirate ship heading in the right direction for sure.
And you know, that was my senior year of high school, and one of my biggest takeaways from that game was just, I think you can probably relate to this, and because of the crowd and the way things were, and just knowing that a lot of our mistakes in the first half were self-inflicted because we were having some success moving the football. I was like, if we can just cut out the silly mistakes, we can come back and win this game. And it was very much like the Peach Bowl, you know, or another game or two in Pirate history where, despite the large deficit, you know, you really felt pretty confident.
Yep, absolutely. If you remember, Jamie Wilson, I believe, was just clipping off nice runs, and then
the sprint draw.
yeah, exactly. You know, and you said it right. And you know, if you think about it, Bubba, the self-inflicted wounds is really how we come up on the short end and stick with most of our games over time. And it's like any other team, but it just always feels like we still have a chance. We never give up, really. And that game itself was beyond electric. I try to describe it to people who don't understand, and they cannot relate to that feeling that night. It's just amazing.
Before we move on to the here and the now, you know, from the Logan years, you know, obviously a rough patch there to say the least under Coach Thompson, but then the program had championship level success in 08 and 09. After Skip Holtz and staff steadily built it into what it became, and just solid year in and year out, and you know, one of the better defensive lines, if not the best defensive line in East Carolina history, there with C.J. Wilson, Limbaugh Joseph, Scotty Robinson, and Jay Ross. And then the program obviously had plenty of success under Coach Ruff as well. So before we talk about the present, what are some of your top memories from those years?
Obviously the Virginia Tech game in Charlotte. The West Virginia game that followed it, the Boise State game and the bowl game there in Hawaii. Gosh, there's just so many. Beating Carolina, that junior college in Chapel Hill. There's just so many games. One of the ones that stands out is another backwards one for me is when we rolled into NC State and lost with Coach Holtz. And I think we got the ball inside the 5-yard line three times and came away with 3 points, I think, out of all three of those trips inside the five. That's one that just sticks with me as a sore thumb. But, you know, just how physical we were as a football team. You mentioned that defensive line. And at a time, again, we didn't realize maybe how good we were up front. But you look at the NFLers that were on that team, just the big wins. There's so many moments, but I'd never forget watching Chris Johnson run up and down the field there, that stadium in Hawaii, against Boise State. And at the time we were kind of competing with Boise State a little bit for that brand on the national level, and we just put it to them pretty good.
We definitely did. That was a victory that was very sweet over in Boise State in the Hawaii Bowl. And, that's what I remember, kind of a funny story, not to get too much off on a tangent, but you know, prior to going to Hawaii, there was some speculation that we were going to play Bowling Green down in the Mobile, Alabama Bowl, that I think it was the GMAC Bowl or the Dollar General Bowl at the time. But And unfortunately, that did not happen because, yes, obviously there had been a lot more Pirate fans there. But a win over Bowling Green would not have done nearly for the program what that win over Boise State coming off a win in the Fiesta Bowl over Oklahoma did for the program.
Yeah, I've got a funny story about that bowl game as well in Hawaii. One of my running backs was on that team that I coached in high school, J.R. Rogers, and he missed his flight with the team. And he came to Sanderson High School and said, "Hey, coach, I missed my flight." And I called Coach Roggerman and just said, "Hey," he goes, "I think I know what you're calling me about. Don't tell me about anything. Just tell JR we hope he's okay." And because Rock knew we were going to figure out a way to get him on a flight and get him out of Hawaii. And we did. And Rock did not want to know how we got him on a flight, who paid for that flight, you know, which flight he was on. He just wanted to know that we were going to take care of JR. But it was just a kind of a funny story because we quickly rallied the troops and got JR on a flight out of RDU. And he made it to Hawaii in about 24 hours. So it's just, you know, funny because I just remember Rock was so short with me at the time. He didn't want to know anything about what was going on. So it's kind of a funny story about him. And God rest his soul. Such a good man and such a good coach. And I've never seen somebody more passionate about East Carolina than Rock was.
Yeah, I've heard from former players, you know, obviously being a former player yourself, not at East Carolina, but prior to that at App State and also for a time there in Raleigh, you were just, I mean, you know exactly how intense those winter workouts are. And I heard some hilarious stories about, you know, Coach Rock as well as some other coaches as far as those 5, 6 a.m. workouts.
Yeah, there's nothing about those workouts that I miss. I can promise you that. And that's why sometimes you hear, you know, fans who start bad-mouthing the players or their effort, this, that, and the other. And I don't think people really realize the investment that's made 365 days a year by these young, you know, student-athletes. So I think we always have to take a deep breath and recognize their student-athletes first. And they invest way more. You know, we can give money, but they give their souls, they give their heart, they give their time, and they really give up their social life for 5 or 6 years. I mean, it really is what it comes down to. Their full-time job is being that student athlete for the university they're representing.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's where I was headed next. The commitment that these guys make and why, you know, each and one of these 12 to 14 games, depending on what it is so precious. But kind of shifting gears to the here and now, and the Pirates taking on Tulane today. Obviously, East Carolina all to a 3-2 start, could be 5-0 or 4-1, but did not make the plays they needed to make down the stretch against NC State as well as Navy. And so taking a look at this one, Tulane's off to a tremendous 4-1 start. I really had no doubt that they would bounce back from their 2-10 season a year ago, and that result just stunned me. Willie Fritz is such an excellent coach, and this should be an excellent football game where we're going to need to bring our A game.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a good friend of mine who coached with Coach Fritz on two staffs. He did not go down a Tulane with them, obviously, but you know, he and I talked about it a couple of times and actually talked recently. I was going to try to get him on a podcast this week and see if he would, you know, join. But he, you know, trying to get land another job, he didn't feel like it was the best thing in the world to go in there and talk about a coach or a coaching staff. But I'll be honest with you, Bubba, and whoever's listening or does listen to this, if we play like we're capable of, we'll win this football game. I'm super nervous about it because it is on the road and it's going to be a smaller venue, smaller crowd. And, you know, we've had a bunch of the home games. We had the big win last week against South Florida. And, you know, it's going to be a tough game to win. But if we play like we're capable of, we should win. And you know, if you look at the stats, which, you know, can be deceiving at times, we on paper actually match up super well with Tulane. It's going to come down to the simple things or the small things that we're all becoming more keen and aware of is the kicking game and making sure we win that turnover battle. But also, can we can we move the ball when they're playing coverage? Are we willing to throw to Ryan Jones and Shane Calhoun and underneath the CJ if he's playing in the slot? Are we willing to just take the dinks and dunks and the donks and not try to just throw over top every time? Because at the end of the day, that's how Navy beat us. And they sat in coverage and they played as far off as I've seen a college team do in a long time. And I just feel like it just threw off our rhythm a little bit. And next thing you know, you're in scramble mode because you get so few possessions. And, you know, we were trying to be aggressive, but it just, you know, the shell they were playing in the secondary made it more difficult for us. I imagine Tulane might do some of that today. If I was playing ECU, I wouldn't blitz, but three or four times a game, I would sit back in coverage and make ECU move the ball and beat us and then try to whip them up front and, you know, hold the running game to, you know, 3 to 3.5 yards per carry.
Speaking of the passing game, obviously last week, Jalen Johnson went down, I believe it was late in the first quarter. He played about 18 to 20 snaps against South Florida. And although we're very talented at receiver, with the starters and perhaps the backups as well, but we have not played many guys, as you know, and it's been Zay Winstead, CJ Johnson, and Jalen Johnson, the Georgia transfer, getting pretty much all the snaps with a few exceptions. You do have Kerry King that's played a little bit, but not as much as of late. He has 3 catches for 30 yards, but you know, Jalen Johnson, hearing that with that lower back tightness that he may not be able to go today. So that will be interesting to see, you know, with Isaiah Winstead, CJ Johnson, Ryan Jones, and also Shane Calhoun, the personnel groupings that we use and, you know, how much that, you know, if we do see Kerry King or some of those backup reserve receivers that have hardly played.
Yeah, you summed it up right there. I was going to say personnel groupings. I'm super interested to see when we deploy in first down, second down, and third down, you know, what groupings on the field. I mean, you might see more 2 tight end. You might see CJ go out and play outside if Johnson's not able to play, Jalen, that is. You know, when somebody has those back issues, much like Noah Henderson, you just never know when that's going to flare up as well. And you know, it really just – it creates a situation where, you know, the athlete just cannot perform, and they want to play, but it's just not able to. But I feel like we have enough depth now. And you mentioned Kerry King, and Kerry King to me is kind of a wild card because when you watch him in person, like I watched him in the spring game quite a bit. I mean, he in my opinion, now without watching tape, he runs really good routes. He seems to have really, really good top end speed. So he could be a wild card today as well in that mix. But it's super interesting to see our first couple of series, who's on the field at the skill positions, including Keaton Mitchell.
No doubt. And, you know, hearing that Keaton will be able to go, obviously he's had that nagging injury, the hip pointer that he suffered against Navy, did not play, probably could have, but he and the coaching staff, you know, elected for him not to last weekend down in Boca Raton. But then shifting over to the other side of the ball, you talked about the Tulane defense. Obviously, the Pirate defense, one of the things they're really going to have to hone in on today, as it appears that that Pratt, you know, that he will be available, Michael Pratt, the Tulane quarterback, or it could be one of the very talented backups that we saw do so well against Houston. But Tajay Spears is the guy I'm focused on, and he's their leading rusher and receiver.
Yeah, Willie Fritz can probably take a pencil and draw a circle around New Orleans and just recruit that area and maybe hit South Georgia somewhere in Alabama. But there's just so much talent there. You always know Tulane, even when they're struggling, they still have, you know, skilled players, and they tend to have a really good defensive lineman. So, you know, I'm super interested to see if ECU can clean up some of the coverage issues that we've had lately. And I do believe they're going to, because they're so well coached. And even when they have busts, they're still, you know, it's not some of the stuff we've seen over the last 6 or 7 years where it's just like, hey, what the heck's going on, guys? It's people are in the right position. They might take one wrong false step, or they might take a degree or two of a bad angle. But if we can eliminate those coverage mistakes and take better first 1, 2, 3 steps in their pursuit to the ball or pursuit through the route, you know, we could be really good. But, you know, going back to what you're saying about the running back from Tulane, that's what worries me the most, as you said. And can we keep Michael Pratt, if he's the quarterback, off schedule? Can we get pressure with three or four guys? And at the end of the day, you know, we are what we are right now. We get pressure when we blitz. And then when you do that, as you know, we're probably in some sort of man coverage. So people are getting run off. And if a quarterback can make that blitz or that pressure miss, now we got a situation where he can move the chains by either making a throw off of that by being mobile or run with the ball. And you know, we've really struggled against mobile quarterbacks for a while now, and including this year. So, you know, if we can play coverage, or if we can bring pressure and get to Pratt, I think we got a really good chance to win.
Final thing for you this morning, is I know you're going to have a little kayaking trip on the river before watching some Pirate football.
Yeah.
So we'll let you get to that momentarily. But final thing with the Pirate Club, Pirates Unite, I know you're a loyal supporter of the program. So just tell Pirate Nation, you know, why you choose to give, you know, and why you believe it's so important that they do so as well. I know you really enjoyed the most recent episode a week ago with Perry Hudson, who obviously has done that better than anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the passion we're talking about, to be honest with you. And you know, I've been talking to Drew and Ron Robinson about having a Pirate Club recruiting effort here in my hometown of Apex. Because, you know, you think about Wake County, people, you know, you think about there's a strong Pirate Club chapter there, but it's in Raleigh, and that might as well be on the other side of the world for watching games and things. There's so many Pirates in Apex who are alumni who go to games and stuff, but they're still not even contributing to the Pirate Club. And when I talk to people at the Pirate Club, I say, look, give what is comfortable for you and your family and your scenario. Nobody's asking you to give a ton of money. If you want to donate $50, that's great. If you want to donate $25, that's great. If you want to donate $25,000, that's great. I just think we, you know, the numbers have dropped over the years, and part of our job as fans and loyal ECU alumni and Pirate Club members is to recruit others and just make that, you know, be that beacon of, you know, what's involved. And you know, when I was high school coach and teacher, you know, I gave at a very small level, Bubba, just to be transparent with everybody here. I've changed careers and had an opportunity to give at a higher level. And it's not about the ego or, you know, what level you're at. It's about, can we provide the best scenario for our student athletes, number one, the best experience, and can we make sure that East Carolina continues to grow and continues to push itself as a first-class university out into the marketplace, so that we continue to grow the academic side of the university, but at the same time, we're not continue to be left out of the expansion as the college landscape changes. So I just encourage everybody, if you can give $10, give $10. If you can give $200, give $200. If you're comfortable with that, you know, if it fits your financial well-being, you know, do what you can. But, you know, you do a wonderful job of recruiting people. I know you've talked to me many times about ideas and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, we just have to continue to be positive and encourage those who aren't given today to give what's comfortable for them.
Exactly. You know, like you're saying, no amount's too small, and no underappreciated or unappreciated, because, you know, some folks, I'm sure, and you know, they think $100, well, really, what can $100 do? You know, yeah, $100 by itself, but when you get several thousand Pirate fans giving $100, $300, $500 as they can, then that can make a significant impact. And it all goes back to what Terry Holland preached, the power of one.
Absolutely. And the Pirates Unite campaign is something too that we just need to continue to allow people to be aware of. You know, upgrading our facilities to stay in the arms race, but also to maintain that competitive landscape. Because quite frankly, you know, if you're a realist and you've actually visited other schools in the state of North Carolina or other schools that we play, we are, you know, severely behind in facilities for the student athlete experience. And that Pirates Unite campaign is something that you can you can slowly chip away at as an individual contributor, and something that I enjoy sending that pledge in on occasion. So it's going to pay off for us, and we just got to continue to be positive and encourage others, and be also be have empathy for those who don't really feel comfortable pledging right now, but just continue to be that person that go, hey, Bubba, he's just always positive about ECU. Maybe I need to get on that train too. And I want to do everything I can to help Ryan Robinson and Drew and Blaze and the Pirate Club group and, the athletic director, John Gilbert, take us to new levels. So just super excited. And when I give to East Carolina, it's about giving based on the history that I have there and the people and the experience and what that university did for me as an individual. And I feel like I owe a debt of gratitude for the rest of my life to East Carolina and then, obviously the Pirate Club as well.
Very well said, Jason. Enjoy the conversation as always, and I know we'll have you on throughout the fall. Talking Pirate football, and Pirate Nation. That is East Carolina alum, Pirate Club member, and season ticket holder Jason Tindall. We appreciate his time this morning, and this is a Pirate's Life for me. Typically coming to you each and every Friday. Today we're bringing you a game week edition or game day edition. And then next week, it will be Maurice Kemp, one of the better Pirate basketball players in our program's history. He'll be joining us from Israel, where he is currently playing professionally, to talk about his experience in the purple and gold. Be sure to follow us on social media, on Twitter and TikTok at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. For Jason Tindall, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. We appreciate you tuning in, and as always, go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Yeah, my heart.